on 1116 SEN. Crunch Time. Voted four times most outstanding radio show for Ringwood Mazda. When it comes to the crunch, you won't get a better deal.
Rounded up by Selwood. We rush the handball. Hughes went to ground. And Robbie Gray comes in, licks the lips, and then kicks the goal. But flicked it back to Stanley. The rat combination have put it through between them as the ball bounced to goal. Play restarted. Straight away picked up by Boak, who fires away a goal for the pocket. And on the wrong side for a right footer, he's put it through.
Forward pocket, Cats. Robbie Gray takes the football. A ground. Oh, Motlop! Oh! Stole it off him. Threw it onto the boot. Goal.
Unbelievable goal.
That's extraordinary. Kicked it out of mid-air, Motlop. That is mercurial stuff.
Kicks it into the pocket. Shields in the wrist. A winner! Oh! How did he mark that? Looked like it was going over his head, but he plucked it. Listen to the sound it from behind the boundary line. He kicks a left foot of banana style for a goal.
Handball away to Stevie J, shakes the tackle. He kicks it inside the 50. Hawkins takes it cleanly. He's got Motlop running through, who takes it, kicks it around the body, kicked a goal. Lobie tackled by Hawkins. Got the handball away. Lang round the body and squeezes through a goal.
Siren sounds on their finest win of the season, a 23-point victory over Port Adelaide on the road. Such a massive game, and it puts them into positive territory and gives them a real chance again of being part of the finals in season 2015. The Cats, 14-8-92, have defeated Port Adelaide 11-3-69.
I'm not being disingenuous when I say, you know, is it season defining? Well, it's important because we're playing a team who's around us on the ladder. Every game that you can scrape over the line in helps keep you in contention.
After an action-packed Friday night with injuries, individual brilliance and some crazy mistakes, Geelong comes away with a win that could set up their season. Harry Taylor will join our conversation about the Cats' short and long-term future. Huge headaches and question marks now for Port Adelaide. What has gone wrong? I'm sure it will be the topic of much debate.
We've still got stuff we've got to do, plenty of things we've got to do, because tonight there was parts of the game where we're sort of nearly breaking through, and I think we're feeling the heat of each mistake, and we just need to forget that, because we can't fix what's going on. We can only get on with what's got to go on, and we'll get back to playing the footy the brave way that we want to play. We've just got to be prepared to keep going at that.
Port Adelaide's dramatic slide continues, and former Crunch Time member and now Port assistant Michael Voss will tell us just what's going on.
The purpose of today is to announce our aspiration, our vision, that we're going to do two things. One, we're going to achieve membership of up to 20,000, that's double our existing membership numbers. And two, we're going to win a grand final in the next 3 years.
3 years ago, he was full of bold promises. So what has gone so horribly wrong for the Gold Coast Suns? The chairman, John Withereth, will join us in the box here at Metricon to try to explain what happens from here.
I'm here to announce my retirement from AFL football. It was a disappointing finish to my career.
I'm deeply remorseful and disappointed with the mistake I made last year. I genuinely never ever intended to do the wrong thing.
I would probably think that you'd try and keep him, but you wouldn't pay over the odds for him.
I just think it's not right that you're standing on the mark and you take a step to the right and bang, someone bumps you.
I would be staggered if at the end of this year Essendon said we are in some sort of reprogramming, reinvigorating of the list, just short of a rebuild with James Hurd at the helm.
Another big week of news, and we'll ask all the questions that matter on and off the field in the crunch. While in the spotlight, we ask, when is the right time for a club to rebuild, and how fine a line is that call? It's another big edition of Crunch Time, because when it comes to the crunch, with thanks to Ringwood Mazda, you won't get a better deal. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Crunch Time. As I said, when it comes to the crunch, you won't get a better deal than from the team at Ringwood Mazda. It gets close to the end of financial year. Some unbelievable sales, and we'll give you more details of those offers coming up. But what a night for the Cats. A huge win on the road against Port Adelaide. At times, Port Adelaide looked as if they were coming, and We've said that a few times this year, but they weren't able to do it. And Geelong now just outside the eight, knocking on the door, just outside on percentage only. And Port Adelaide, unfortunately, are behind the eight ball at 5 and 6. Slightly different crunch time team today. Clubs are taking byes. Our boys aren't on a bye, but Derm and Kingy on their way to Perth for tonight's game between Essendon and the West Coast Eagles. Robbo's still with us, though. Morning to you, Robbo.
G'day, Anthony.
Oh, hello, Mark. huge performance last night, wasn't it, from the Cats on the road? Did you expect it?
No, I didn't. But the question was, after Geelong's performance last week against Essendon, could we get a gauge from it? Halfway through the third quarter, I was thinking to myself, watching, there's a pretty good gauge last week. They were better than I expected. But at the end, it was a bit of a, not a canter, but it was a...
It was a pretty
comfortable win, because they absolutely... I reckon the last 40, 45 minutes, they shut down Port Adelaide. They didn't either risk or threaten to score, you know. They weren't going to kick 5 goals in the last quarter to overrun them. So it was a very, very strong win.
It was a strong win, a tame ending for Port Adelaide. Nick Maxwell, Collingwood, the Premiership captain, was with us last night in the commentary. And, Maxie, they didn't have anything left to give, did they, Port, in the end? They'd made so many mistakes during the night, but you've got to give a lot of credit to Geelong. But where does it leave Port Adelaide in your mind?
Oh, they're going to really struggle now to have an impact and to get the position they need on the ladder, let alone just to make finals, but then to sort of set yourself up. So, yeah, interesting to talk to Vossi later on, because I think that there's a fair bit that we saw last night that they need to do a lot differently. But let's talk about Geelong as well. They were outstanding, and I think we've seen the next progression of the Geelong Football Club with Lang, Caddy, Blitzarves, Guthrie, these guys through the middle, and that's the future for the next at least 5 or 6 years through the midfield for the Cats.
Yeah, as I said in the opening, the discussion about the Cats, it's on every level, isn't it? It's on the now, it's on the medium in the next year or two, and on the long term. And who better than Terry Wallace to be engaged with in that conversation? The Plough, good morning to you.
Yeah, hello, Hutto, and boys. Yeah, I was over there as well last night. Look, they just controlled the game of football, really, after the first 15 minutes. Fascinating to see, at the 12-minute mark of the first quarter, Port Adelaide had scored 31 points. They scored 38 for the rest of the game. So that was where the control was from Geelong, and we'll speak about it in more detail. But really, when you go through it, they controlled every aspect of the game from that stage onwards.
Amazing last night. There was 100. The average number of stoppages per game is 71 this year, which has gone up on previous years. There was 112 last night, 71 throw-ins and 41 ball-ups.
Certainly plays into the hands of Geelong Football Club when you've got a guy who's 6'8", can run like the wind and can be your third man up playing as a midfielder. So I thought that was fascinating the way that was played out. And again, I'm looking forward to talking to Vossi, because to watch Reece Stanley, as soon as Geelong won the ball in the back line, he would sprint to full forward. And Lobie, for some reason, kept chasing him all the way back to full back. And then there'd be a stoppage back at the other end of the ground. He'd have to run back 100 metres of the stoppage. It was crazy stuff.
Maxie, I thought he was best on the ground up till half time.
He was, absolutely.
Yep. Because it wasn't only his ability to win the ball, but that breakout speed, getting out of the stoppages and out of the clearances. Yep. You're right, the dynamic when they've got those two guys working together, and at certain stages, I mean, the umpires are going to be really tight on this, yeah, because, you know, who's taking the ruck and where does that go? I remember going back a few weeks ago, there was a penalty given to
against
Blitz.
Josh Kennedy.
Correct,
for Blitzars, yeah.
Spot on. Yep. And it was just absolutely...
Was that for the block?
It was wrong, yeah. It was called a block because they thought that Blitzars was the ruckman. They use it beautifully. It's added a completely different dynamic to the side, and they got slaughtered in the ruck last night.
Yep.
And just for good sake, every now and then they'd throw Joshy Walker in there just to add up a little bit of a mix and just to overcook Lobie even more. But I thought it was devastating the way those boys were used.
They won't change the rule, hopefully, any rules around all that, but they just have to be clearer on what's allowed and what's not allowed.
Because they're not at the moment, are they? They're not.
Because it's no different. If you're standing on Blitzarves, just like you'd be standing on Joel Selwood at a stoppage, you've got your arm across each other. If you're thinking he's a midfielder, that's fine. But all of a sudden, if he tries to go up as if he's going the ruck, you go, oh, no, I was the ruckman. And then umpires are getting confused by that. So they've got to clean it up.
Yeah, like Jordan Lewis, as we know, was the number one third man up last year. And what clubs started to do was block Lewis as run. And I asked Jordan about it on 360 one night. And he said, well, there should be a free kick because I'm getting a block. And I said, well, okay. You know, I didn't know.
That means that six guys who are standing there could say that they were going to go up in the ruck.
Well, can I ask you a basic question of that? Why do we allow the third man up? Isn't the whole point of the ball ups meant to be the two ruckmen going for it?
Oh, I think because it changes the dynamic around there. And if you think that that's an area of your game that's a weakness, or if you want to try and keep the ball close to the boundary line, or if you want to open up through the midfield, you get a definitive hit out, basically, compared to, because you've got two guys standing next to each other and a guy running and jumping is always going to get above them.
It's a huge advantage for Aaron Sanderlands if there's no third man up. And that's fine. Correct. You're lucky enough to recruit him and identify him and draft him and develop him. Good for you. But I don't think in this game one opposition team or one team can give the other team such an advantage. They've got to come up with a way to curb his influence, as we do a gun full forward and a rebounding defender. They've got to have some way of curbing his performance. And the third man came in. And that other thing about Maxi and Plough, about, even dominant midfielders, in four or five of them, they try and hit it away, get it out of the congestion, and the third man up was brought in, A, to combat a dominant ruckman, and B, to turn it into a major plus by having someone running or streaking by, 12 metres off the ball, and that used to convert into goals.
How do I actually like it? Because, number one, it's actually trying to clear the area of congestion, so you're actually trying to push the ball to an advantage area.
The numbers suggest that it doesn't actually increase.
But if you take it away, is it worse?
I'm not sure. I just know it's messy around the clearances at the moment.
I think it would be worse. I think it would be absolutely worse if you've just got the two ruckmen, and so therefore everyone else is just congregating around that. I don't think it's got anything to do with a third man up, what you're getting from congestion. The congestion.
No, I'm not saying it's going to clear up all congestion. I just think it's messy with who's going up. Anyway, it's a side issue.
But the other factor of it that I like, Robbo, is that it gives you different dynamics. You were talking about Jordan Lewis playing that type of role. Now all of a sudden, clubs are going, hang on, we might be able to look at a different dynamic. So we're going a Mark Blitzars to be able to do it as an athlete. So
there's not too many Olympic standard runners out there at 6'8".
But it creates different opportunities for different types of players
in the game. The game evolves and finds answers. It's like nature.
Well, so the midfielder now, the 6'4" midfielder, they used to be a ruckman.
True. Plough used to be an on-ball centreman. He'd be a rover. He'd be Corey Gregson these days. But the beauty of having a third man up is 6'5". It's changing the entire dynamic.
Correct.
Of a midfield. I mean, they were so dominant together last night. I'm looking at them, and it's happened several times. We've come in here on Saturday mornings and others on Sunday mornings and said, God, how was Blitzars the Pendlebury one, and the discussion last night on the commentary, which was a really good discussion, was what does Ollie Wines do? Does he just allow Blitzars to jump?
No, he can't.
Or he goes with him, but that takes away a bull as a midfielder. Mm. And it sort of has two whacks at the opposition.
But on last night specifically, Stanley knew that he could run to full forward, and it didn't matter if he didn't get back for the stoppage. He dragged Lobie away, and then Blitzars rucks against who?
It's very clever, isn't it? Really?
That's great coaching. That's what everyone spends 5 days planning. I'd like to know the bloke who said, hey, I've got this idea.
And Lobie's sitting there going, I'm absolutely tonguing because all I'm doing is I'm just charging around, chasing this other guy who's almost like a sprinter himself.
Yeah. Harry Taylor's going to join us in a moment. We'll take some calls. But let's hear Chris Scott's explanation when asked about the pendulum, where it is with this Geelong squad.
I think the jury's still out. I think it's an important message to our supporters that we're up for the fight. And we have a level of optimism that if things go right for us, we can compete with anyone. So we're not saying we're in transition and it's okay if we lose a few because we've got, a few old players and a few young guys coming through. We want it now. But we've been clear that we weren't going to make decisions purely for the short term. So I think it's going to take a period of years to work out, whether we've got it right or whether we've made some mistakes. We certainly made some mistakes. There's no problem admitting that. Every club does make them. But I think there's more to be positive and optimistic about now than for us there even was, say, 2 months ago.
Again, there was a win based on some of the young players. Obviously, a youngster named Corey Enright was pretty handy back in defence. But that second level of midfield, Guthrie and Caddy were terrific, as were Blitzars and Stanley.
Yeah, they were. I thought Chris Scott spoke very well after the game. I thought he was pretty honest. He goes, you know what? All our fans know is we're up for the fight. Mm. And you say, yep, that's a tick. You're up for the fight. How good can they be? He doesn't know either. And I don't think we really know. I thought that was their best win for the season. And if you can replicate that Geelong every week, you're going to be thereabouts. You'll be in there kicking at the end of the season. But with those young people, Hutto, as you know, we see them play some really, really good games. And then they'll drop away and they'll be thinking, oh, geez, there wasn't much in that. It wasn't much in that performance. But last night and last week's performance, last week was a demolition job. Last night was just a real solid game of
Caddy,
football.
Caddy and Guthrie are the two that they need to stand up every week,
and
don't they?
And they're probably the two who go up and down.
But that's also where, when you look at the age, and the question keeps coming about their age, in the back line it's different. When you've got Mackie, Enright, Longy and Kelly all over 30, you've got Buse and Thurlow who can pick up the smalls who are too quick for these older guys now, but they're that smart. They know where to position themselves. They know what each other's going to do. They know how to read the play. They could play in that back line for another few years. But then when you look at the other guys we're talking about, imagine using Stevie Johnson in a forward pocket. And I know that people are saying, he's averaging 21 touches and he kicked 13 goals before last night. If he ends up a 25 to 30 goal forward pocket, he's still dangerous. He's still basically got to have a tagger on him because he's dangerous. He takes away one of the best defenders. Bartel can go anywhere when he comes back. So
no
people
doubt.
Are saying that he's gone. He's played one game for the year in 1 minute.
People jumped all over him too early, Maxie.
Oh, way too early.
I heard you discuss this last night with, I think it was Tim Maharvick on. I was listening. I made a mental note to bring it up with you today. This really jumped on me early in the season. Like after four games, Steve Johnson's career was at the crossroads.
But everyone's still comparing him to Steve Johnson of his absolute best, second in the Brownlow, 35 touches and 2 goals a game, his average. Now if he's playing a genuine forward pocket, he can have 15 and kick 2 goals, and he's more than playing his role for the team.